the humiliation factor.
It's right. Slap versus punch.
That's right.
Yeah. Slap is way worse.
I mean, punch probably hurts more.
Right. But the theoretically. Slap is like, I don't even respect you enough to punch you. Yeah. Like,
that's true.
Is it the open hand slap or the slap with a glove? Which one is worse then?
Ooh. Open hand. I mean, slap with a glove. Yeah, I'm not connecting with the hand, I think. In like 1900s Britain.
Right. Like, I understand pain-wise the slap with the hand is worse, but like from like the shame standpoint. Dandy. Yeah.
Sorry.
I like the like 45 second delayed laugh.
Yeah, I was thinking about the question and then I went back and heard his response.
All right, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff. With me as always, Pastor Dave Bowser.
How are we doing, Patrick?
And Elise McCarter.
Still here. Still pretty successful. Howdy.
Pull up our news article. I got two here, so I got to figure out which one I like more.
Oh, my gosh.
Uh-oh. All right, yeah. We are in studio.
We are.
Yeah.
Live in studio.
Amazing.
Happy 10 years, by the way.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
You know, you got to say 10 years for what? You can't just say the happy 10 years sobriety. Welcome back from prison, 10 years.
There's a lot of options. Right. A lot of, no, today is the 10th anniversary of my ordination, so I became a pastor 10 years ago today.
Okay. Yeah. That's exciting stuff.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Feel like you've learned a lot in the last 10 years? Any insights you want to glean for us?
Oh, goodness. Insights to glean, 10 years goes by fast. Sure. Yeah.
That's depressing. The mm-hmm.
Pretty soon it'll be 20. And well,
pretty soon. Right around the corner.
I had no kids when I was a pastor. I now have two kids, so that's a thing.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
Still a pastor.
Still have two kids. I have not yet reached the 10th anniversary of being a parent, so that's still to come.
That's for me next year, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Me too, right?
Yep. Yep. Yeah.
Wow, congratulations.
In fact, a year from yesterday. Yesterday was Sophia's 9th birthday.
Happy birthday to her.
Yeah. Happy belated birthday to my daughter.
Let's talk about running. Ugh.
Oh no.
Love it. Let's do it.
No.
You want to talk cadence, heart rhythm?
I'm still closeted, so.
Get your VO2 max. We can do all sorts of good stuff here. What do you want to talk about?
We're going to talk about Strava. Do you know what Strava is?
I do know Strava.
What Strava is. Yeah. Yes.
Give us an insight. What is Strava?
A cult.
Strava is it's Facebook for athletes, right? So it's an opportunity for you to communicate with other people and share where you run and how you run or how you bike or what. And it's, you know, it's a online, what's the interface for people?
Yeah. Cult.
I mean, it does at times get cultish. I'm not on Strava personally. But some they will say, if it's not on Strava, did it even happen? Like, that's one of their kind of taglines, yeah.
Sure, because, I mean, your body, it happened to your body. like you still did it.
Right, I understand. But it's like, if there's no pics, it didn't happen, right? It's their thing. It's like, if it's not on Strava,
they,
did like, it even
they
happen?
They brag about it, and they compete against each other and that kind of thing. It's a very strange thing to me.
Sure.
Want to be like, look how slow I am. Like, I don't know.
But for some people, it's also like motivation and community. Like, you're there and other people are also as slow as me, but we're running in this together. And
there you go. Well, runners on Strava are paying mules to impress followers with fake workouts.
See?
Okay, that's ridiculous.
I knew it.
And the mules are not like donkeys. They're not like strapping their phone to a donkey.
That would be way better.
Yeah.
So what are the mules? Just like people who are carrying their phones around?
Basically, like paying a fast person.
Like, I'm paying you to sign into my Strava and run while I eat chips and watch TV.
All right.
So ridiculous. That's a strategy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So more than 100 million people around the world use Strava.
Yeah.
To record time, distance, and location.
That's a third of the population of the United States. Yeah, but it's all around the world.
Around the world.
It's spread out.
More people aren't worried about this?
Is Strava going to come get us all?
You're right.
All these fit people that can run. That's concerning.
Yikes.
Or that can pay other people to run, apparently. Yeah. All right. So 100 million people.
Yeah. And then some people are using mules. All right. One mule here, Wayu Wakansona from Indonesia. He doesn't average one or two runs.
I like that we're outsourcing our workouts too, and that's great. Yeah.
He does one or two runs of various lengths every day for 76 regular customers from Strava.
Oh my gosh.
All right, so here's what I want to know. Does he have 76 different devices strapped onto him and do like one or two different runs at once? Or he's just like covered in a suit of phones and just running down the street? Or is he like...
It's like the trench coat. That's what the trench coat's for.
Right.
With all the watches inside. It's
or is he doing...
Apple Watches, though.
Is he doing 76 times... Is he doing 150 runs a day? That can't be right?
He says one or two runs of various lengths a day. So.
Okay. For 76 people.
And he has 76 regular customers. So, I mean, he might not, you know.
Have every customer every day.
Every customer
I get
every day.
You. Okay.
You
all know, right.
So, but still, that's a lot.
That, I mean, yeah. But if you, hey, if you can get paid to do it, if I could get a full-time gig for doing one or two runs a day.
You
to
could.
Help other people lie in their social lives? Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Why not? So why are people doing this then? Is it because they like are like dating somebody and they said like, oh my gosh, I'm a very passionate
Check
runner.
Check me out on Strava.
Right, like I'm really into
and
my
And now they
got
to live up to it, yeah.
And they're not.
I mean, what's the end game there?
Like eventually somebody's going to find out or notice you're not actually going to run, right?
Are the other, maybe you're hoping the other person is also faking their runs. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when it's like time to run the actual marathon, you're both chicken out.
Right.
Like, worst game of chicken.
So oh, yeah. I tore that ACL.
Yeah, right at the start line. Oh, no. My ACL just went out while I'm standing here.
Do you still get the t-shirt if you don't actually?
Yeah, you absolutely do. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, you pay for
you
the
don't
t-shirt.
Get, you don't get the finisher medal, but you do get the t-shirt. Yeah. That's interesting. My guess is that they are social media influencers who are doing other things and are pretending like they have these really great runs right. also. Mm-hmm. That's my guess.
Yeah.
All right.
But the relationship thing is funnier. That's
Now I'm suspicious of everything.
What's even real?
Right.
According to our runner, our mule here, mm-hmm. he says, some people can't run.
Does he self-identify as a mule or is that like a name that we've thrown on
them?
The
term we've given him. That could, yeah.
Does he like call himself a Strava mule?
He actually calls himself a Strava jockey.
Strava jockey.
Oh, a jockey. Right. Okay.
That means he's riding
mules
the mule.
Or jockeys both seem to be the terminology okay. on the so like he started advertising on Instagram.
I love it. Like, hey, send me your Strava right. and I will run for you.
Right.
Yeah, and he charges
what a gig.
14,000 Indonesian rupee per kilometer.
All right, hold
and
on.
Nobody knows what that means.
I'm going to find out. Here we go. You guys keep talking. I'm going to get the conversion here.
Yeah.
First, we need two conversions.
Yeah,
so we need
kilometers.
I can help. I can do the kilometer one. That's fine.
Wow. Okay.
With higher fees for races or marathons. So. So why does he? How
All
much?
Right. So 1 rupee is 0.000065 cents.
Oh, that didn't help at all.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how much is 14,000?
I'm getting there. Hold on. Yeah. That's, yeah.
All right. Well.
91 cents.
Oh, he's not charging enough.
Oh, so, yeah. He needs to get a lot more.
So less than $1 a kilometer. So that means you're looking at less than $5 for a 5K race, for a 3.1 mile race.
No.
Less than $5.
My good sir.
I get
you can do better.
Indonesia has a different economy. Yeah.
I get unless he's doing 20 of these at a time, and then that might be, at least reasonable.
I don't know.
Like, so, but yeah,
I probably can't afford to pay someone.
When I become a Strava mule agent,
right?
I'm upping our rates. Okay.
Step one, you are worth more than this.
Strava mule talent scout.
Know your worth, man.
We've got some runners in the youth program. I mean, they're running every day anyway.
Yeah, you're
might practice. As well sign into somebody's Strava.
Strap on some things and go to town.
Or we could do it and our pace would actually be believable. They'd be like, oh yeah, I believe that.
Yeah, they did
really
that.
Really did that, you know? Like
we are realistic Strava mules.
Right, yeah. Look how slow.
my wife once did like a little step challenge thing and then realized on her watch, like the same movement of like crocheting counts.
What
she's like, well, this is pretty good. So you might not even be able to have to run if you can kind of get the hack in there.
Yeah, I'm guessing Strava actually does some satellite tracking, not just like the movement. So it's probably more like actually tracking your distance. Okay. Nothing, but I could be wrong.
Well, they don't do a good job of checking based on your location.
Yes, yeah, so. They are doing that.
All right. So why, Sam? So, okay, according to the mule,
why
some people can't run due to injuries.
So we gotta fake it,
right.
And some people don't have the time to do it themselves.
So we gotta fake it
again.
So,
like, what this is the point?
Neither of these are justifications.
Right. Neither one of those benefits you at all. Like,
okay, well, you could win a king or queen of the mountain badge.
Okay,
if you come on top of a leaderboard,
sure.
And yet, like, what?
What do you get out of that?
Right,
a badge on this.
It's not like Nike's
gonna
sponsor
profile.
You for that.
No.
Like,
put on your resume.
Yeah.
King of the Mountain badge, right. Strava
2024.
Also, great somebody, delegation.
If
skills.
Somebody applies to our youth director position that we have open here with a King of the Mountain Strava badge on their resume,
hired.
They're immediately into the shredder.
Yeah. No, I'm getting them. I'm getting them on board.
They out.
No. Here's we can't trust it. It was probably somebody else that ran it for
them. So, Strava is not is not a free service. So you pay a membership to be on Strava.
And then you pay.
And now you are paying someone else to make you look better on Strava. This is quite a game that they're at.
There's a lot wrong with the world.
There is.
Yeah. Evidently, some influencers, you know, are on Strava. And you could maybe.
Yeah, that's your
yes.
Do you pay for Strava?
No, I told you at the beginning, I'm not on Strava. Yeah.
Okay.
No, he's a purist.
Sure. You're doing your own runs. Or
I am doing my own runs.
Right. I've never seen you.
Yeah. You said you run. Is that some Indonesian guy?
David.
I would have known the conversion to rupees to dollars if I was doing that. All right. I would have known that. I wouldn't have looked at it.
I mean, yeah, you were just looking at your phone. I don't know. What
you found it pretty quick.
Listen, Google's a great tool. All right.
Here's a podcaster and Strava and has a Strava following. She said, they might be offering brand deals or spots in competitive races with limited spaces, so it becomes a lot more serious when those kind of rewards are offered based on your profile in Strava. So,
okay.
So maybe those are incentivizers there.
Yeah.
It's all seem like the only one that I get is if you've built your brand around like being an influencer and you're suddenly injured and can't run and you need to like keep up your following to keep up a like, okay, I get it. Mm-hmm. I think it's dumb, but I get it. Mm-hmm. That's the only one that I can understand. Yeah. The rest of it, this is dumb.
They say what an extreme length people go to impress other people online.
Indeed.
And indeed. You know, not the first time people have lied online, to my knowledge.
Is it not?
What?
To my knowledge, I think some people
my
out there
understanding is that everything online
lied
is true.
Online. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, now if I know, if I ever come across anybody online who's like bragging about their Strava.
Yeah. Liar.
Doubt.
Yeah. instantly a liar.
Yeah. Strava had a statement.
Oh, okay.
Strava's mission is to motivate people to live their best lives.
That away. By the way, Strava.
they go on. Sorry, I had to scroll past an ad to kind of get there. Part of the platform's magic comes from the authenticity of our global community in uploading an activity, giving kudos, or engaging in a club.
Uh-huh.
And as part of our terms of service, Strava athletes agreed to create only one account for their personal use and not share their account or Strava credentials with others.
Ooh, these people are violators.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Kick them off. So here's my question, because my understanding is that Strava does track your like location, because that's how it knows like how far you went and stuff like that. So isn't it a little bit confusing that some social media influencer from North Carolina
is
doing all their runs in Indonesia? Like, did no one think like this is odd?
Yeah. I'm
what's
just
happening
traveling
here?
A lot. I'm just traveling. Okay. Right. Yes. Look, I'm committed. Even I'm traveling.
Yeah,
I gotta get that
twice
running.
A week. I'm just traveling to get to Indonesia. It's like what?
One of our students who is a runner, every time on our mission trip, he does do his runs
for sure.
And that's
if. I could see somebody traveling to Indonesia and going for runs. That's fine. But I feel like if they're just suddenly there randomly, it's like,
that doesn't seem right.
I guess, you know, if you're cheating in Strava in a fake run for fake accolades, maybe you haven't thought this completely through.
That's a fair point, too. Yeah.
If you're like, what happens if I don't do this run? And the answer is
nothing. Right.
Yeah.
Like, you know, maybe paying a guy $5 to run 2 miles for you is
5 miles.
Then you don't get the little sticker on your car that way.
That's right. You don't get the sticker on your car.
All right.
You can just buy those stickers. You don't have
to
do anything.
Like, nobody's actually
Amazon sells them. If I see somebody with a sticker, I'm not like, hey, you better run that marathon right now. Prove that you earned the sticker.
Do it now.
I think that a lot about like the Iron Man tattoos that people get when they do an Iron Man. I'm like, did you though? Or did you just say, I would like the Iron Man symbol tattooed on me for some cred?
Is that really a symbol that you want tattooed on you?
I don't know, because you see it and you immediately are like, wow, at a minimum, that person can ride a bicycle for a really long time.
And probably run for a really long time, yeah.
You know, you can run faster than a shark, and a shark can swim faster than you. So in the Iron Man, it's going to come down to the bike.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. It's all going to come down.
Can a shark ride a bike?
That's what it all comes down to.
That's true. The bike is where it's won and lost.
The great equalizer.
They all say that, yeah.
All right, let's get to our main topic.
Okay. Wait, that wasn't it? We're not just talking about Strava?
That one's going to haunt me.
What's our faith say about how we should treat our Strava mules?
Are there any running stories in the Bible? Probably. John and Peter
run to the
tomb.
Yeah.
John gets there first. Or did he?
Who knows?
Did he pay some other guy
a mule
to run faster?
That's right.
Yeah, Jesus rode a mule. Are we sure?
He said, save my spot.
Jesus rode a donkey. That's
Different, very different.
I don't know why they're different, but they're different. That's
yeah. they're different. So, do you want to know?
I do. What's the difference between donkey and a mule?
So, a donkey is like a purebred animal, okay. right? And a mule is a cross between a donkey and a horse.
Oh.
And they are historically sterile. So
right, because when you crossbreed, yeah.
Except that there recently is a mule that got pregnant.
Whoa.
And it's like a big
is
deal.
It, is this the...
this is evolution
is this
of the mule.
Virgin Mary of the mule
right.
work? Yeah,
right. Follow the story, y'all.
the virgin mule at right. Instagram, yeah.
Our Lord and Savior is going to be birthed by a, right. new, a mule now? Yeah. For the mule community.
Right,
for,
yeah.
Yeah,
right.
for them, yeah.
All
yeah.
mules welcome.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sure there's a pun in there.
There definitely is. I'm like, I'm a little anxious about it, though.
Yeah. It'll like come to you later on. You can bring it back.
Really will,
yeah.
You know, we're gonna follow up on a previous, on a following episode.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, by the way,
here's my mule pun.
Been my joke that I did not come up with,
and it'll be great. Yeah. it'll be wonderful. All right, what's our real topic today?
All right,
what are we talking
about today?
Okay.
Okay.
Where's that headline page? I lost it.
Oh no.
Where's the cover page?
Oh, it's on the ground.
We're off to a great start, I team. I love it.
I had to print it out because it was not letting me sign in to our account.
Oh, no. Did we forget to pay?
No. Unclench Your Fist.
This is just good stress techniques.
By Kristen Dede Johnson.
It's like those memes that you set or that you see every once in a while that pop up. It's like, hey, stop slouching. And you're like, oh, I should stop slouching.
Dang it. They got me again.
Dang it. Every time. Yeah.
That's a meme?
Yeah, it's like, well, I don't know about meme, but it's like, it's a thing that pops up. Meme is perhaps not the right word.
Did you say meme? I'm not letting that slide.
I think you did say meme.
Meme is definitely not the right word.
Meme.
I think I should be called meme. So yeah. That's fun. Did you see that meme? Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
Unclench
it's like you're talking
your
about your grandma.
And evidently, this is a series.
Oh,
okay. So we can circle back.
Maybe we
back
can follow up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, series, I'm really glad we got that cover page for that.
The series is called...
it had nothing on it.
Yeah, Evangelicals in a Diverse Democracy. Now, we're not evangelicals, even though it's in our name.
Okay.
Yeah.
I love saying that every so often. We're like, just FYI, remember, we are not.
Not that evangelical.
Even though we have named ourselves such. Yeah.
It's in our name. It's not in the evangelicals' name. It's in ours.
That's right.
We're not them.
Yes.
We're not them. Yeah.
I did read one of the articles in this...
series?
In this series. You know,
other than this one?
Other than this one. It was called, like, basically, we're in the evangelicals are in the, I don't know, accept stage of, like, they're losing their political power. You know?
Oh.
Like
they're going through
the
five stages
of grief.
The five stages of grief. Of
do we think the evangelicals have lost their political power?
Yeah, 100%. They are clinging to it as it is dying, kind of a thing.
I'm not seeing any evangelicals accepting that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't, I feel like that's maybe.
Maybe they're not in the, maybe they're in the,
I feel pretty hard denial phase. Yeah.
It's a strong denial phase still. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Maybe they should be in their accept phase.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, Christianity Today, you know.
Everybody cycles through stages of grief differently.
They're in the evangelical world, but they're not probably in the heart of the evangelical world.
Yeah. Sure.
Okay. This is not about that. This is for Miss Kristen Dede Johnson.
Oh, I was hoping it was Kristen Bell.
Yeah. Kristen. I don't think she's an evangelical.
She could have written this article.
Would love to hear her POV, though.
Yeah. She could talk about sloths and this.
One of my crushes.
Yeah.
questions about
one of? Do we need to circle back to that? No? Okay. Well, let's keep moving.
How long is the list?
Yeah, not that long.
Okay.
Yeah.
Questions about the place of Christianity and the posture of Christians in a pluralistic society have never been merely theoretical for me. They've always been personal. So we're starting off, place of Christianity and posture of pluralistic society. We're going to get to this idea of unclenching your fist, but first she wants to go through our own journey of what does it mean to be a Christian in a pluralistic society.
Do we all understand what a pluralistic society is?
Let's define it.
Elise, you got this one.
Oh my gosh, no. you just kicked that to me because you're not totally sure.
No, I mean, I know what it is, but I
or
I
just
talk
to like, tell us, Elise,
right.
And what's
I
your
hate
trauma?
It when he does that, yeah.
What's your time?
You want to... You want to hire
it's
a mule?
It's multiple belief systems.
You want
right?
to hire a mule to come in here and answer the question? Yeah, it's multiple belief systems. Yeah, it's
you're my mule.
It's a society that's based on multiple.
Correct.
Exactly. Plural, more than one.
Yeah.
There's not one right. You know, if you're in, I don't know, Iran, that is not a pluralistic society, right? It is the law that everyone is practicing the Islamic faith. We are not that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she was drawn to Christian faith as a child in London and. During that time, you know, that city had a profound religious, ethnic, and cultural pluralism that she was kind of experiencing. And she got she remembers kind of like heated conversations in classmates in high school where she at the time, and she says she's wrong. So by the time, you know, challenging kind of the idea of like, how could someone who is an atheist have like a moral foundation?
Okay. That was that's what she was arguing in high school.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
We all did weird things in high school.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah. I mean, she says that was a naive thing to have. Yeah. But in this pluralistic society, obviously that was challenged back.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that pushing back on the assumption that people who don't believe in God have deep moral convictions outside of faith.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to need you to read the rest of her quotes in a British accent because she is from London.
Uh-huh,
so
yes.
We're going to need that.
I really am not very good at the British accent.
Let's hear it. It's going to make it better.
Give it a go.
No. I wish I had a good trap.
Was that your British accent?
Let's assume it wasn't.
My British is Harry Potter quotes.
I love it. Yeah. You're a wizard, Harry.
I wasn't British either.
I was Hagrid.
I was just grumbling.
Hagrid is loosely British.
It's Leviosa, not Leviosa.
That's good, yeah.
Yeah, and then, you know, she kind of says, and the same friend she kind of felt kind of coming back was this idea of, sorry, I'm trying to find it here in the article that I have kind of.
This is the problem with paper these days.
She, now that they've grown up. Okay. Kind of came back with convinced that religion is now harmful and no longer has a positive role to play in society, politically, or otherwise.
Okay.
And so
she
now
she feels that, or her friend feels
does.
That.
Okay. And so now she's like now on the receiving end of kind of a pluralism hurt.
Sure.
She was on the giving end and now she's on the receiving end. So now she's kind of figuring out, okay, like how do we navigate both, you know,
what does this look like?
What does this look like?
Okay.
You know? So, all right. So what do we think? How does Christianity navigate a pluralistic society?
Yeah, well, I mean, Christianity was the plural in its original birth, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it was in a society that was not particularly pluralistic. I mean, you had a limited amount of that because the Romans basically allowed the Jewish people to continue to be Jewish.
Yeah.
But you had Roman culture as the dominant culture, and then you had this little sect of Judaism, and then suddenly Christianity pops up. So from the start, Christianity had to kind of figure out how to exist in a culture that did not accept it. The shift right now is that for the most of the Western countries in which we're familiar with, Christianity is now the dominant, or at least the culturally dominant experience. Yeah. And so how do we, from that position of power, or at least majority, express ourselves within the pluralistic society, I think is the question to really wrestle with there.
Hmm. Yeah, 100%. You know, and so it's really tough to kind of glean like lessons from the Bible, where their Christianity is the littlest little brother in the room, and now we're the biggest of the big in the room, and so like how do we navigate things differently is much more challenging.
Sure.
But I think one thing we do say is, you know, statistically, or you know, you want to look at all polling or all evidence, Christianity's place as the cultural center is starting to diminish. That the assumption is no longer everyone's a Christian, or at least has a background in Christianity. The assumption is no longer we all have this shared religious values as a cultural community, and that it doesn't play out its same way in public policy or platforms of our political parties. And we went over that last week, how neither one of them really is living into the the biblical Christianity, one of them claims to.
And I mean, we've seen this playing out in Europe over the last several decades. Europe is much less Christian-centric now than it used to be. In the United States, it's kind of seen that play off. But what we're seeing is that Christianity is rapidly growing in other parts of the world as well, where it's interesting, right? In many ways, Christianity almost seems to continually grow in the parts of the world where the margins are being most affected, right? Those on the margins are being most affected. It seems to be where the gospel of Jesus is grasping people most firmly and transforming lives. And so you see that all over the world where Christianity is rapidly growing, but you're not seeing it in places where, by and large, people are more comfortable, right? I'm not saying that by any means the United States is everybody's comfortable here, but by and large, we're in a place where most people in the United States are more comfortable and not having to think about the simple fact of where do I get my bread the next day, right?
I imagine there's probably some like pattern across history of like the expansion and contraction of religious beliefs, Christianity or otherwise, too. Like that's just going to be kind of a repeating thing throughout time. It's not necessarily like a a finger on the pulse of the health of a religion or validity of religious beliefs, but just this.
Well, you know, some of the religions are getting mules to go out and make it look like they're growing
yeah.
in other areas.
Those are, yeah. the cults, yeah.
Yeah. So they have actual mules.
One of the things I have taught of our confirmation students, too, is kind of that when we go over the history of Christianity, most major world religions kind of rise and stay where they are birthed, in yeah. a sense, where this is where it started and this is kind of where it stays. Not to say it doesn't bleed over, but Christianity truly moves around the globe.
Yeah.
Where now the largest church in the world is in South Korea.
Mm-hmm.
And it's maybe diminishing in, you know, North America, but growing rapidly in Africa and mm-hmm. South America.
Yep.
So, I mean, like, and so the next generation, I think, of great Christian thinkers and leaders will not be have the same influence of Western values that
yeah.
that the past 200, 300 years of Christian thinkers and writers have yeah. had. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, even our current pope, not our pope, the current pope,
yeah.
Is, the I believe, the first non-European pope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I mean, I think that symbolizes a shift even within the dominance of the Catholic Church, which is certainly still finding its center in Rome, right? But, you know, there's a shift in its own leadership and its own kind of population yeah. densities and things like that.
Okay, so she's going to talk about Augustine.
Oh, another Catholic.
Yes.
St. Augustine?
Who is St. Augustine?
He was Catholic.
The oldest city in the U.S. did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yeah. Legitimately, I
Augustine
was
what?
St. Augustine, Florida.
Oh, really? Is
I
the
was
oldest city
flabbergasted
in the
by this fact, yeah, because I was like Plymouth Rock, Jamestown, like that stuff. And yeah. No, St.
The
Augustine.
The oldest continuously populated mm-hmm. city yep. in the... Interesting.
Yeah. Okay. You're welcome for that history tidbit.
Yeah, okay. There's information that I'm not going to... Yeah. So this St. Augustine, goodness, he would have been, what, like 400s is when he would have been alive? Is that about right?
Yeah, somewhere in that range.
Back in the day.
And yeah. a lot of the Catholic Church's understanding of sin is based on his teaching, big in the doctrine of original sin. I don't know. I'm not a huge Augustine scholar, but... Yeah.
I've read some stuff. Some stuff I like, some stuff I don't. Like
yeah.
Is he the theology of the body guy, or was that somebody else?
Theology of the body. You're going to have to be a little bit more specific.
It's like the whole like Catholic text where he does this whole theology of like purity in your body and like sin in your body.
That certainly sounds like something he could have done.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know if he did it or not, but that sounds like something he could have.
Sure.
Yeah.
Augustine had a very complicated and kind of messy upbringing and then became very, very devout and very, very like cut out everything bad mm-hmm. and all sex is impure and all, you know, impure thoughts are evil.
Yeah,
and,
he's yeah. the theology of the body guy, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, and you know, I think Christian could have done a better job here of explaining who Augustine is that she does not do in the article.
Sure.
She just drops it and assumes
she's like,
we
hey,
know.
Guess yeah. who I like? Augustine.
Yeah.
Like, I assume.
Yeah.
We're talking about the same guy.
She's open. Maybe she's talking about St. Augustine, Florida.
That's true.
Love it there.
Like it's wonderful. Coastal community.
Yeah. Did you know it was the oldest city in the United States? Who would have thunk?
It says, Augustine, too, became a Christian in a deeply pluralistic and tumultuous setting. Throughout his life, including his many years in ministry and as a public figure, he was always aware of the many religions and philosophies around him, and Augustine did not expect Christianity to dominate society, and he rejected the impulse to respond to rapid political and cultural change with fear or anger.
Okay.
Okay, so she's
I can't
be...
vouch for that, but sounds good. Yeah.
Sure, yeah.
How do you fact check that?
I mean, you'd have to go and read a lot of Augustine, yeah.
Was
yeah.
Augustine angry?
Sometimes, yes.
I'm sure, yeah. I mean, yeah. Based on his writings, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So I think this is some important stuff that we need to get through.
Okay.
Here. Like, okay, we do have a rapidly changing political and culture.
Yes, we have that.
That's an undeniable fact.
Yes, both here and in St. Augustine. Yes.
Yes. Both on Christians' cultural dominance mm-hmm. and now kind of diminished. Even the fact, you know, I think we've referenced the podcast before, you know, gay marriage is an incredibly progressive thing
mm-hmm.
for the United States.
Mm-hmm.
That even the liberals were not proponents of, like, are not predominantly pro gay marriage until, like,
yeah,
less than 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so, like, you know, this is a very new thing.
It is.
And so it's a cultural shift. We, like, definitely
yeah.
have that.
We're living through that, yeah.
We're definitely living through this major cultural shift and figuring out what those things look like. And so he, you know, according to her, he does not respond with fear or anger. Instead,
ooh.
Augustine called Christians to remember that we are citizens, first and foremost, of the city of God. And this is our primary identity. And that no matter what happens in politics or culture, Jesus is King.
Sounds a lot like my sermon I preached on Sunday.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
I didn't realize that I was quoting Augustine. Yeah. But the sermon, and we don't need to go into that, but it was simply the same idea, right? That we're first and foremost Christians, and we have to root our identity in that before we are doing other things, not the other way, not get that backwards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, this is definitely one of the ones, and I don't think the Lutheran Church is like, everybody should learn from us on everything, but I think this... we have a kind of a two-kingdom system on how we approach the world, and at least, you know, politically or kind of nationally. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is one that I think Christians could definitely learn a lot from.
Yeah.
You know, this idea of like...
We might not use evangelical right, but this one we get pretty well. We're going to...
This idea of like, we are first and foremost citizens of the kingdom of God in your community, and you have one foot there, and you also have one foot in... the kingdom of your culture and of your country. Mm-hmm. And when you lean too heavily on that foot in the kingdom of your culture and your country, you're losing sight of what the kingdom of God is. And you have to balance out how you put your feet in both of those spaces.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so it's an acknowledgement that if you're a Christian in America, you're part of the voting population, you're part of the system, you're part of these things, but your hope is not found in political figures, power, or cultural shifts and change, but is in Jesus.
Yeah.
And nothing can shake that.
Yeah.
Even if preferred candidates lose, even if policies do not go the way you want them to, your primary identity cannot be shaken because it's planted in you are first and foremost part of the city of God.
Yeah, but you're also planted in the world in which you live. And so leaning too far into the city of God, right?
Yeah.
And leaving the culture to destroy itself also destroys
also
you.
Bad.
Right?
Yeah, yes, like yes.
It's both. I'm with you 100%, but that's it's the balance.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so he is going to Augustine.
I was going to say this was a female, but all right. Yeah. Augustine.
Open-handed discipleship.
Oh.
All right. And so I think that, you know, an open-handed discipleship. Okay, we get a high five.
Open-handed.
Yes, that's the open hand. The closed-handed is the dab. Yes.
Is that dabbing?
I thought that was fist bumping. It's
called, you can... Oh my gosh, if they changed the name.
I thought dabbing was a different thing.
It's always been a dab.
So no.
Go to Urban Dictionary.
I will not.
Devastating.
I heard Google was super fast and easy to do when it came to
I will get
Strava mules.
I'll get a Strava mule to look that up for me. Right.
So basically, open-handed means... you approach the world with your hands open, with giving rather than receiving.
Okay, so I'm opening my hand to give something, not opening my hand to receive it.
Because if you are receiving, it's with gratitude.
Okay,
you're receiving into an open hand, and it's going out with an open hand. And the inverse of that would be the tight-fistedness or the closed hand, where instead now you are clutching tightly the things that you possess and that you have, or you're grabbing the things that are given, things like that.
Okay. Taking it away.
Yes.
That's mine.
Away. Yeah. We are all, by the way.
We all have our fists.
We have our fists
right
up.
We're ready for fisticuffs.
It's like to have an open and closed hand.
Who's punching who first?
We needed the visual. We all needed to understand. Like, okay, this is closed.
So if you are listening to this, please do the same.
Yeah. Right.
Open your hands.
We're all in this together.
Oh, there you go. Look at that.
Look how nice.
Look at those palms. Close your hands.
Yeah, I feel so. I mean, there is something to like the physicality of the body of just like clenching your fist and feeling like more tense and angry than just relaxing and holding your hands open.
You do this.
With the spirit fingers.
Augustine, I don't think, had that. The spirit fingered hands.
Approach the world with spirit fingers.
Augustine was behind us.
I don't know who brings on jazz hands. But, you, know, like,
you should do this. I pronounce the jazz fingers.
Like when I'm doing weddings.
Yeah. I don't know. Whatever you do with your hands.
What do you do with your hands? Yeah, like the classic photo. Like, what do I do with my hands? Yeah. Like, nobody knows. Once the camera comes out,
jazz hands.
What do I do with my hands? Yeah, jazz.
Yeah, jazz hands.
When in doubt,
every time,
jazz hands.
Right.
All right. So let's take a look at this. Maybe in like we can break from our Christianity Today.
Okay.
How do you see Christians practicing this closed hand approach? Let's start there.
Clutching to political power, right? I mean, the sheer fact that we argued about whether or not they were in their denial or in their acceptance phase, right?
Right.
I think if we're in our denial phase, if we're even trying to say like, oh, we need to have political power, right? I think that is a piece of, like, let's get this clutched fist and let's make sure that we can enforce rules that ensure that our ways stay in practice or are enforced on others.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all fear, right? Like, it's fear of being influenced by something other than maybe what you think is exactly right or true, right? Yeah. And I get it. I do get it. I also think that your faith has to be able to withstand whatever outside influence might come its way, you know? Yeah. And I think that if I expect other people to be influenced by me and my faith, I have to also be open to being influenced potentially by other people and their beliefs, you know? Yeah. Like, it's a two-way street, so.
I think school prayer is another great example of this, right?
Oh, my goodness,
right?
Sure.
Like, or Ten Commandments.
Yeah, sure, Ten Commandments in schools, right? Like,
in Oklahoma, every school has got to teach from the Bible in every class, which is insanity.
That's right. Insane, yeah.
How do you teach
even
math?
Even I went to private school and I did not teach from the Bible in math class. Right. Like, that's an incredibly insane thing.
A lot
thing.
Of the number seven. It's just like all we can do.
we can multiply by sevens.
Count seven and stop.
And I went to private school. I went to a Lutheran private school.
Yeah.
We did not bring the Bible into every class.
Yeah.
Because that's irrelevant.
But I think these are places where culturally we're trying to clutch on to something.
Yeah.
Right. As opposed to sending our children with open hands to say, you can go and learn and you can offer something, right?
Yeah.
There's never been a law that says a child cannot pray at school. We've said the school cannot require people to pray, right?
Yeah.
Or pray for your child.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, there are so many ways in which we can do that. We can do this with an open hand and be people who receive the culture in which we are and can be a blessing to the culture in which we are, as I would say the Bible encourages us to be, right? But we've clutched at these things instead and said, no, it's got to be this.
Yeah.
I think those are some good examples.
Yeah.
We could go with others, but I think those are good.
I 100%. I think anytime Christianity is motivated by fear or anger, that's when you clutch your face.
Yeah.
You know, that's definitely, and I think we definitely have seen that, you know, like fear of a changing culture, fear of a loss of political power, fear of now for many people out there, they would say like our generation was in tuned with God. And now I see my grandkids and they don't go to church. They're playing soccer on Sunday mornings. And there's a fear of loss there.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, like.
And there's a real loss there. Yeah.
And I understand that there's a loss there. But I don't think clutching and clinging to fear and anger are going to be beneficial for the church in the long run.
Yeah. There's a smaller scale version of this that I think is helpful too, but there are two congregations that I know back up in Ohio, and both came on very hard times. Populations changed, people moved away, et cetera. They were both going to face closing, right?
Yeah.
One, basically what I would say is clutched their fists, right? And said, we're going to hold on to this for as long as we can, and slowly died off and slower and slower, and then had nothing at the end. And the other said, we know we're going to die. We're going to open our hands and we're going to sell our building and endow gifts. And so they closed at a point where they could still be of a blessing to other places. And so they sold their building because their property was in a downtown area. And so, you know, on a million something or other, and were able to use those funds to support ministries and sustain ministries throughout their community. And I think those are just ways in which, on a much smaller, not political scale, but I think as Christians, how do we respond to those sorts of things, that open or closed hand?
So ideally, how should Christians respond with an open hand then? What does this look like? We've kind of defined, I mean, that was a great example of kind of churches that are closing, but in your day-to-day, how do I respond with an open hand?
Yeah, I think there's an element of how do I go into the world remembering that God is already there before me, right? Mm-hmm. Wherever I am, God is already there before me. And so I'm putting out my hands in a posture of receiving whatever it is that God has for me to receive in this space. And so I don't go in with the sense of I am bringing everything that this place needs and I have the answers, but I'm going to say, what is God going to teach me in this space? What am I going to learn from God in this space? I think that's a posture that we can enter into.
Yeah, I think open hand suggests a level of like generosity. And I don't think that's just necessarily generosity with your finances. I think it's generosity with your spirit and with kind of like your expectation for others. Like that it's a far more generous approach of like everyone is doing their best, even people that practice different faiths than I do. That everyone's trying to love their families, raise them in a moral way, and that's an open-handed generosity that I'm giving, you know, that we're kind of approaching them with.
The one exception is people who hire mules to run on Strava.
Then
close that fist.
That's right. Yeah. Close it up.
But, you know, I think that's just approaching kind of conversations of faith differently.
Yes.
But so, like, your family screwed up and Jesus can fix it.
Yeah. Welcome to our new sermon series. Yeah. Yeah.
Your family screwed up and Jesus can fix it.
Yeah.
It writes itself.
Yeah. It's like blatantly false. Yeah. Because there's plenty of screwed up families within church systems that seem to have, you know, access to Jesus. And it's disingenuous to kind of like, okay, like how does that work? Like, now it might work when people are in tragedy and crisis, they turn to faith for answers or hope or help. But when people are just like living their life, like, do we need to wait for people to be in tragedy to be like, that's our evangelical method?
Yeah, that's it.
When people get in tragedy, we're ready. You know, like, that's
nailed it.
That's kind of not how I think Christ operates. Not how I think.
I mean, Christ did reach out to a lot of people in tragedy.
Yeah.
For what it's worth. But that was not his primary mode. Yeah.
And I mean, she's definitely highlighting, you know, Jesus empties himself, opens his hands wide enough, you know, to die on the cross for redemption.
That's,
you know,
a beautiful evangelical turn of phrase there. You just saw it coming, right?
Yeah.
So are there times where we should have a closed hand, a closed fist?
Hmm.
Is there any times where you're like, that actually seems like a closed fist makes sense?
I think if by closed fist we mean a posture of fear and a posture of clutching to what we think is important, I'm not sure that there is a time. I think there are times when we should be aware of what's central to our faith and we should hold to those things. But I don't know if we should ever hold to those things out of that posture of fear. Like, I think there's a way to hold on to what is good and central to our faith while maintaining an open hand posture. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yep.
So I'm going to lean towards no with a possibility of maybe.
I haven't thought about it enough really to give like a concrete answer, but I also like, I just don't think that fear ever really plays a valuable role.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I've had this conversation with my spiritual director before, and she will talk to me a lot because I'm a very heady person, right? And so I think about things a lot before I like actually let myself feel them. And so she'll talk about how to let myself feel something as a gift, and she'll use the phrase of just hold it, right? And like, can you hold this thing in front of you and look at it without clutching to it and claiming it as your own? And you know, whether that's someone else's pain or someone else's joy, right? Can you sit with it and hold it as a gift without claiming it as your own? And I think there are ways in which that applies here, right? That we hold whatever we experience and we examine it, and then we choose, do we pick this up or not? And we do that all with this open hand posture, as opposed to I have to clutch onto this thing so that nothing else can come in here. Because we don't know, right? We might learn something from this new experience that informs those things that are most central to us.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, if you look at kind of Jesus as our example, and I think
it's a pretty good place to start.
He's a pretty good one, yeah. The times where I think he's most closed off or the most, like, operating in anger is kind of with religious authorities who are presuming to speak on behalf of God. And they are not, you know, that's the sticking point for Jesus.
That's fair.
So I think the idea of like, that is the place maybe like we want to close off from the church is when aspects of the church are saying like, we're speaking on behalf of God and the world is against us and we're fighting back. Like, that's the place I want to fight against those people.
Yeah.
You know,
that's
like,
fair.
Like not necessarily the world who presumably is fighting against me, like that I can deal with, like that in many ways I think the church and Jesus like get, you know, like the world is going to be contrary to the Christian faith. It's when Christians start to close off the world or start to blame the world, you know, and things like that. I think that's when Jesus kind of makes a whip, you know. That's when he gets frustrated, and that's when you kind of see that angry side of Jesus. So but when it comes to those on the margins or even the Roman set authorities, Jesus is pretty open-handed. You know, pretty willing to kind of serve and welcome those people. So all right, any last thoughts?
I think this is a good one.
I have a book recommendation.
Oh, okay. Is it on topic or just a...
It is. So
she's writing a book, by the way, according to this. It's called Open-Handed Discipleship.
Okay, well, I'm not going to recommend that one because I don't know her. It's a series, actually. So, The House in the Cerulean Sea by T.J. Klune. It is a...
House in the Cerulean Sea?
Cerulean Sea. Is like this a real... color cerulean.
That's a color.
Right. So it's a magical realism series. It's not Cerulean, true story. Cerulean is not in the CMYK
sense.
Yeah. Cerulean is like that bright blue color that like the printer.
Oh, so you're saying blue.
I thought that's cyan.
No, I think it's blue.
Yeah, it's blue. Yeah.
It's a blue sea.
Yeah, sorry, it's a blue sea. House on the blue sea. Okay. All right, anyway. This is the wrong crowd to make the questions to. No, it's a series now. So the second one in the series just came out, and it is about... the first one is really about like found family and identity, and also a little bit of fighting back against a system of oppression. And the second one is very much about resistance and what that looks like. And it's a great book. It made me sob in public.
Sounds like one I definitely want to pick up.
Wonderful though, like hilarious, so sweet, pure wish fulfillment all the way through. But also made me really challenge some of my own kind of biases that maybe I was still carrying, and I think of myself as a pretty progressive person, but like, even so, I still have biases, right? And so I found it very interesting to kind of examine some of those in the form of this book, and I highly recommend it.
She said it's a fantasy world, is that?
Yeah, like magical realism, so like very light fantasy.
Okay, so this is not like werewolves and vampires getting along.
No, so it's the tagline for the book is the most feel-good story to ever involve the Antichrist.
Oh.
Highly recommend, it's amazing.
The most feel-good story to ever involve the Antichrist. Yeah. Okay. All right, there you go. Not a lot of feel-good stories, so it's a low bar to get over.
No, it's so funny. It's great.
All right, there you go. Yep.
All right. The House on the Cerulean Sea.
In the Cerulean Sea.
In the Cerulean
Sea.
Don't
be confused by that other book.
That one's lame. Don't read that one.
There's a lot of houses around the Cerulean Sea. Right.
Get the right one.
Not the one on the coast. You know.
That's right. Yeah.
Because they're the worst.
in St. Augustine, Florida.
All right. Well, since Patrick recommended St. Augustine, Florida, I think we've reached the end of our time today. If you...
By the way, I'm not recommending St. Augustine, Florida.
What's wrong with St. Augustine?
If you have any thoughts about the color cerulean or about St. Augustine, Florida, we'd love to hear those. You can send it in to beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com. And of course, you can find all our episodes at beyondsundaypodcast.com.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.